back in.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Let me do it. Oh, hi, guys.
I love that. Oh, hi, guys. I can't do it.
Oh, hi, guys. Hiya, pal.
I'm Sarah.
I'm Alicia.
And this is
Sinister State. And we're coming back at you with another Massachusetts.
Dun, dun, dun. No.
There you
Massachusetts. And I don't know.
I don't know how it's said. Listen, I heard people trying to say Appalachia.
Dude, I saw a TikTok where somebody said Appalachia.
Yes, and that's what I'm saying. I saw that too.
Where they were on the podcast.
The other guy's like, that's not how we say it. And they say it like...
Appalachia.
Yeah. I don't know.
Or something.
It's Appalachian, guys. The Appalachian Mountains.
Yeah, I was...
How do you say it?
Appalachia.
Yeah.
Appalachian Mountains. It's the Appalachian Mountains. In school, I think they taught us the Appalachian Mountains,
It's somebody who's from the mountains.
Yeah.
And I speak the mountain, it's Appalachian.
Yeah, that's why I was saying, like, in school, they taught us Appalachian, but now, knowing the proper pronunciation, it's Appalachia.
So, yeah, people, you don't want to go too far into that.
Nope, I've heard too many stories. Like, if you hear whistling, don't whistle back. Or if you hear your name being called, like, don't go and follow it.
You're watching the haunted TikTok stuff, aren't you?
Well, I talk to you, so I think it just comes up and chooses me.
I'm just saying, like,
but yeah, all the haunted stories.
I still think that one lady was a bird. I still think that one lady's. Where the hay or whatever, that was a bird.
Did you see the one that did I send you the one about the guy that was going through the restaurant at his job?
Mm-hmm.
And that figure showed up behind him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you could hear it talking to him too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he's like, it said something like,
I follow you all day.
All day, yeah.
Or I follow you every day. I was like, oh, it really said it. Like, you listen.
Yeah, there was so much whispering on there too. Dude, the thing that was scariest wasn't even, like, scary. It was the alarm clock going off. I thought that he didn't set that, but apparently he did.
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't scary to him, but I was like, I would be terrified if it was midnight and I'm in this restaurant alone. But the thing that threw him was the lights were off and then they were on.
Yeah. So, it's... But there really was something behind it. Like, you could see it.
Whether it was staged or not, which I don't think it was staged, but...
I don't think so either. I could be wrong.
That'd be really intricate.
Some of those things on TikToks are funny. But the woman with the hay behind her, I could be wrong. Or the voice saying hay out of the woods or whatever. Mm. I honestly think that's a bird. You if you did so? Not know that, crows can actually talk.
Yeah.
You can, like, train them to talk. And so, like, most birds, you can train them to talk. And I really, as somebody who had a talking bird, to me. Anyways, back to it. We're going to quit squirreling.
We're going
to
jump in.
So I have John Dorchester Doe, 1988. So, of course, we'll have this posted for the missing person. But he was found October 6th, 1988, of course, in Dorchester, Massachusetts. And his estimated age is 14 to 16 years old. Of course, an unidentified male. Was found deceased in a small wooded area off Eldon Street in Dorchester within Suffolk County on October 6th, 1988.
Say it again?
Suffolk.
There you go. I was like, what county are they in?
Suffolk County.
Yeah, you're right. But I was like, is it different than what I know? But no, keep going. You're good.
On October 6th, 1988, the boy had been deceased a few days before being found. His estimated to be 14 to 16 years old, and he stood approximately 5'4" and weighed around 130 pounds. He had short black cropped hair and brown eyes. The boy was found clothed wearing a gray sweater, blue shirt, blue jeans, red underwear, white socks, and white Avia sneakers. A second young black male, approximately 17 to 20 years old, was found deceased next to the boy. The second male is also unidentified. Both males appeared to have died around the same time. Investigation into their death has revealed that both males may have been from or had ties to the Bronx, New York.
They are close enough.
DNA testing has confirmed that the two males are not related to each other, and the image that's shown is a facial reconstruction completed to show what the boy may have looked like in life. And just so you guys are aware, they did not have an image of the second boy. And I'm thinking it's because this one was 14 to 16, and the other one was more like an adult. I'm wondering if that's the reason why. I'm not sure. I'm not gonna lie. So that's it. So if you know anything or you have somebody that's missing, go online and look at that. I can't help but yawn. I keep yawning and I don't know why. It's like a lazy day. I don't know. But I am going to be discussing, and did you see the smile on my face? I got excited. I'm sorry. I shouldn't be excited because people died, but the New Bedford Highway Killer. Have you ever heard of this?
No, and I'm from this area, so
Okay.
no.
This is wild. So between March 1988 and April 1989, an unidentified serial killer, and is still unidentified to this day,
That's ghetto, and I don't like it. Let's find him.
known as the New Bedford Highway Killer, was responsible for the deaths of at least 9 women and the disappearance of 2 others in New Bedford, Massachusetts. It's believed that the killer may have also assaulted several other women. The victims were either sex workers or had addiction issues. And although they were taken from New Bedford, their bodies were discovered in various towns nearby, such as Dartmouth, Freetown, and Westport along Route 140. And this case was primarily investigated by a detective, John Dickstrouder?
Good luck.
Dickstroder. I
Good
don't
luck.
know.
I don't even know what that would be.
It's just Dickstrouder?
It's either that or Dextrader.
Dextrador, I don't know. Either way, he was the primary one that investigated this. So my allergies are acting up. I'm gonna go ahead and forewarn you. If I sound weird, I'm still like kind of sick like. It's these Bradford pear trees. They're killing
Is
me.
that the ones with the little flowers on
Yes,
them?
and they stink.
Oh, I have one in my backyard, I think.
That's what's killing me.
Sorry.
You should cut it down.
It's not my property to cut down.
Well,
I don't own this
North
house.
Carolina. Oh, this is way off topic, but just so you know, North Carolina says, okay, so they're saying that those trees are not normally, they're from Japan, I want to say it was. So they're not like an indigenous tree, like they're not from here. And so the state of North Carolina just put a program into place that if you cut down your Bradford pear tree, because the limbs on them are so weak because they're not made for our environment, more than likely they're going to snap and break because they break real easily. So North Carolina has started a program where if you remove your Bradford pear tree, they will provide you with a local style tree that would normally be found in the area to replace it with.
Nice.
So I thought that was pretty neat. So if you're in North Carolina and you have a Bradford pear tree and you hate that stench, people, have you smelled them? They stink,
What do
stink,
they smell
stink.
like?
A rotten fish.
Is that it?
They really do
Oh,
stink
I don't know.
bad.
Maybe I don't have one in my backyard then.
Yeah, they smell awful. That's what they smell like to me anyway. So anyways, back to the case. I did see where this was referred to also as the Bristol Highway Murders. There's a couple different names for it, but the New Bedford Highway Killer is what the killer is known as. So that's what we're going with. So his first victim was Robin Lynn Rhodes, who was 29. She was also referred to as Bobby Lynn, and she was found on March 28th, 1989, along Route 140, southbound in Freetown by a search dog. She's believed to have gone missing sometime in March or April of 1988.
Wow.
Rhodes had dated suspect Kenneth Pont, and she had a young child and was addicted to heroin and cocaine. While she was never involved in prostitution, she knew many of the other victims and was friends with a victim that would later come to light, a Mary Rose Santos. So then victim number two was Rochelle Clifford Dopolaria. She was 28, of Falmouth. And she disappeared sometime during late April 1988. Her body was found in December 10th, 1988, in a gravel pit along Reed Road beneath a tree grove about 2 miles from Interstate 195 by people riding ATV. She was partially clothed and had been beaten to death. She had dated at one point and stayed at the home of suspect Kenneth Pont, too, who was arrested for her murder, but the charges were eventually dismissed due to lack of evidence. This was the only time that charges were brought in this case. Rochelle had testified against another man who had raped her, but he is not the suspect in this case. She was last seen with victim Nancy Pivia's boyfriend, who was an ex-convict, and he was cleared in both deaths and was not a suspect. So the third victim was Deborah Lynn McConnell, 25, of Newport, Rhode Island. She was the mother to one daughter, and Deborah was last seen sometime in May of 1988 by her father after the funeral of her mother at a local cemetery. She is believed to have been the third victim, and her body was found on December 1st, 1988, off of Route 140 northbound in Freetown through a cadaver dog search. She was found nude with a bra wrapped around her neck. Yeah, so, like, poor you girl. Can tell as this is going, like, the progression's getting worse. Deborah Medeiros was 29 of Fall River, and she lived with her mother. Deborah was known to both police and family to have had a long-standing substance abuse issue, but no record for prostitution. She was last seen by her boyfriend in New Bedford after a fight and was reported missing on May 27th, 1988. She was the first of the bodies to be found, and she was identified in December of 1988. Her body was found on July 3rd, 1988, by a woman who went to relieve herself just into the woods on the side of the road of Interstate 140 in Freetown. So, like, back in the day, there wasn't that many rest stops, so you just had to go.
Yeah, you had to get
pop a squat use, somewhere.
Use good old nature.
Yeah, and it said that her remains were severely decomposed, and her body was positioned on her side, I'm sorry, on her back with her feet pointed towards the highway. Her cause of death was strangulation, and she had a bra wrapped around her neck, and she was found partially dressed. Her boyfriend was ruled out as a suspect, and after her death, her mother became a counselor for drug and alcohol addicts in honor of her daughter's death. So I thought that's sweet.
That was nice.
Victim number 5 is Christina Montero. She was 19, and she was last seen sometime in May of 1988, and she has not been heard from since. Christina had a child and had a known substance abuse history. She was a Cape Verdean American female.
Cape Verdean?
Verdean.
Yeah, Cape Verde is like an island.
Okay. With brown hair, brown eyes, and a scar on both wrists and a scar near her left eye. She was between 5'3 and 5'10 and was 110 pounds. She had initials and words tattooed on her arm, and she was wearing a shirt, blue jeans, and sneakers when she was last seen. So she is one of the two that was missing. They can't technically say that.
Do they say if she's still missing?
She's still missing. Oh, okay. They never found her. So yeah, there was two of the 11 that were never found.
Oh, okay. But
they're assuming that
they're dead.
They're part of this. So Marilyn Cardoza Roberts was 34. And she was last seen in June of 1988, and she's not been seen or heard from since. She was reported missing on December 1988, and she was also neighbors with victim Christina Monteiro, who is still missing. Uh-huh. So both of these women went missing back to back. Christina Monteiro went missing in May of 88, and then Marilyn went missing in June of 88. So, and it would be very easy to probably get these women, you know, because a lot of them were addicts.
Mm-hmm.
But all, you know, at this point between May and June, Marilyn probably has realized that Christina is missing. And all it would take is somebody to say, I know where Christina's at.
Yeah.
And being her neighbor and her friend, you would go.
Yeah, definitely.
And not think anything of it. Right. So, and it's probably, that to me says that it's probably somebody that these ladies all knew.
Yeah, I mean,
or the indirectly statistics
you
knew. Said
earlier about, like, you know, sexual predators, it's the same thing for murderers. Like, they usually, You have your like one-off murderers that just go after anybody, but a lot of them, they know who they're going after and why, which is really sad.
So, victim number seven was Nancy Lee Pavia. She was 36 of New Bedford, and she was last seen walking home from a bar called Whispers Pub on July 7th, 1988, after a reported fight with her boyfriend in the South End in the early hours of the morning. Nancy reportedly had substance abuse issues, but was not known to be a prostitute. Nancy had gone to secretarial school but had dropped out. She was married at 19 and divorced, and she had two teenage daughters. Nancy was known as a very supportive mother and grandmother at the time of her death. Her kids must have had kids real young, too. At the time of her death, she had a steady boyfriend who was a drug dealer known to police. Her relationship with her boyfriend had been dysfunctional with domestic violence issues. Her nude body was discovered beside Interstate 195 westbound in Dartmouth on July 30th, 1988, by two men who were riding motorcycles. Her body was found in the same position as victim Deborah Madero's, on her back with her feet pointing towards the highway, and Nancy's cause of death was also believed to be strangulation. Her boyfriend is not a suspect in her death. So, victim number eight. These are a lot of people. We have Deborah Greenlaw DeMello. She was 35. She was a mother of three, a 15-year-old daughter, Sandra, and two boys who were 8 and 3, respectively, at the time of her death. She had struggled with substance abuse issues since her teenage years, and she had walked away from a prison work release program to which she had been sentenced due to a prostitution charge on June 18th. And she was last seen in New Bedford on July 11th, 1988. Her body was found off the eastbound Reed Road ramp of Interstate 195 by a state highway crew on November 8th,
That's my brother's
1988.
birthday.
Really?
Yeah, I know. I'm so annoying with that.
No, you
Just have a
got
lot of
this. You're doing good with the
birthdays.
numbers. I can't even read November,
You're
and I'm
good.
saying December, so. Deborah's nude body was in an area with trees with her clothes strewn in the branches. She was found with some belongings of another victim, Nancy Pavia. So she was found here in the woods with things belonging to another victim.
So they definitely, like, the women might not know each other, but this murderer
It's definitely the same one.
knows,
That's how they're
like,
tying them all together.
yeah, like, I feel like that is personal
Yeah.
in a way that's more, that's not just an MO.
I almost wonder if Deborah DeMello and I didn't look at like all of their pictures, but I probably should look at their pictures and see how I bet they looked very similar to each other.
I wonder, but that seems like more than an MO. That's
Yeah.
like, haha, I got you, but I got your friend first.
Right.
Even though they probably didn't know, but
Right.
still, that just, ugh, sorry.
You're fine. So, victim number nine was Mary Rose Santos. She was 26 of New Bedford. She was a mother of two who was dropped off on July 16th, 1988, by her husband, with whom she had recently reconciled, near the downtown bus station, and was last seen dancing at the old quarterdeck lounge 5 hours later. Friends said her husband had no idea she was working the streets to help pay bills, and she was known to have a substance abuse issues. Her nude body was found with a beer bottle
Don't tell
on.
me where that beer bottle is. Tell me, but don't tell me.
It doesn't say where it was.
Okay, good, because usually,
Yeah.
bottle-shaped items go in specific holes.
Right. On March 31st, 1989, along Route 88 in Westport, by two boys. Suspect Kenneth Pont had represented Mary Santos in a civil case and helped her husband make flyers after her disappearance. His name just keeps coming up, doesn't
It
it?
does.
Victim number 10 is Sandra Botello. She was 24 and she was a mother of two young sons who were 4 and 6 years old. Botello was known to have significant substance abuse issues and did engage in prostitution. She reportedly left her apartment on August 11th, 1988 at 11 p.m. and never returned. She was the final body to be found, though, and she was located in the woods along Interstate 195 in Marion on April 24th, 1989. Her body was nude and reportedly was folded into a fetal position.
Oh my gosh.
So that's probably the position that she died in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she was probably scared. Our final victim that we have is Dawn Mendez. She was 25 and she was last seen in New Bedford on September 4th, 1988, walking from her apartment to a family christening party.
That is so sad.
Mendez was one of 10 children and was also the mother of a 5-year-old boy. She had a history of prostitution and drug use. Her body was found November 29th, 1988 on the westbound Reed Road ramp off of Interstate 195.
Say that 3 times fast. Right. Reed Road ramp.
Westbound Reed Road ramp by search dog. There were mostly skeletal remains, but her hand was able to yield a fingerprint, which led to her being identified. Her mother raised her son after her death.
Wow.
So we have a couple of suspects, of course.
Good.
But keep in mind, nobody was ever arrested for these ladies' murders. So our first suspect is Anthony DeGrazia. On May of 1989, a 26-year-old construction worker named Anthony DeGrazia found himself in this complicated situation. A sex worker named Margaret Medros was shown a picture of DeGrazia, and she described as having a boxer-like build with a flat nose. Despite her description, she did not positively identify him as her attacker, only mentioning that he resembled the man who had tried to choke her. She was 22 years old at the time and was brought before a secret grand jury to provide testimony about the incident. He was brought in for questioning and appeared before the grand jury, but he was never formally charged. So he was a suspect for an attack on this prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
However, the district attorney, Ronald Pena, later sought a warrant for his arrest, accusing him of 17 attempted rapes and assaults on various sex workers in the Weld Street area. Upon learning about the warrant, DeGrazia, along with his defense attorney, Edward Harrington, surrendered to the courts. DeGrazia was then arrested and formally charged with the allegations of the 17 rapes and assaults. So the case took another turn when Judge Edward Harrington set his bail at $180,000, along with a $1 million surety bond. Unfortunately, unfortunately for him, but fortunately for us, he wasn't able to come up with those funds, resulting in his 13th month stay in the county jail. Throughout this period, he had a total of 18 court appearances facing the allegations brought against him by the district attorney. In an attempt to gather evidence in his defense, DeGrassi's defense attorney filed 18 motions, including a request for bail reduction due to the lack of evidence. However, each motion was consistently denied by the presiding judge. Frustrated with the lack of progress, DeGrazia made the decision to request to have the judge replaced with a Boston, to replace Judge Harrington with a Boston attorney named Robert A. George. And Attorney George wasted no time and immediately filed a contempt on the district attorney's office for their failure to produce the evidence. So basically, he requested that he get a new judge and then he got a new attorney along the way. So they did reduce his bond and he was released from jail on June 27th, 1990. But his freedom was short-lived and he was swiftly re-arrested for allegedly threatening District Attorney Ronald Pena.
Interesting.
Right. So, he then again managed to post bond and secure his release, but exactly just 1 month after being released this time, he was found dead at his ex-girlfriend's parents' house in Freetown. The Freetown police, who were first to arrive at the scene, initially ruled the death as a homicide. Later, it was declared as a suicide. So, yeah. But he was a prime suspect for a long time, but they were unable to
Pin it on him.
pin it on him because he killed himself. So, what does that tell you?
He probably guilty.
Right. I mean, this was 1990, so there were no more murders after this. It
Right.
happened 88 to
And you just
89.
offed yourself when things started to heat up.
Right.
I mean, I personally wouldn't off myself if I was being looked at and I knew I didn't do anything wrong.
But then we have Kenneth Paunt,
Pumped.
you know, the guy. In August 1990, New Bedford lawyer Kenneth Paunt, that's right, he was a lawyer, was indicted by a grand jury for the murder of Rochelle Clifford Dopoloria, who was brutally beaten to death. Paunt had a troubled history, which included drug use and a previous incident that involved the same woman. The Bristol County District Attorney, Ronald Pena, once again we have Ronald Pena there, suggested that Pont may have killed her because she was supposedly planning to expose his drug-related activities. Her mother mentioned that her daughter had given Pont her phone number in case she needed to be contacted. Pont himself admitted to representing Dopolaria in April of 1988, just before she went missing, when she accused another man of raping her. Now, it doesn't say if it's the same guy, but it's potentially the same guy. Because, you know, she was accusing a man of raping her. So, Pont relocated to Port Richey, Florida in September of 1988. He was never formally charged with, or sorry, he was formally charged with murder on August 17th, 1990, and pled absolutely not guilty and posted a $50,000 bond. On July 29th, 1991, the district attorney decided to drop the murder charges against Pont due to insufficient evidence. The drug and assault charges that remained were also eventually dismissed, and the case in New Bedford went cold. Pont made headlines again in May of 2009 when police searched his former New Bedford residence. But they found no evidence linking him to any crime. Later that month, he was arrested for shoplifting, caught with stolen sardines and cheese from a local store. We're gonna steal cheese and sardines.
That's cheap, okay? If you want to steal, make it something delicious. I'm not condoning theft, but come on. Cheese and sardines? I
Right.
mean, you might like that, but like, come on.
January 27th, 2010, Pont was discovered dead in his New Bedford home, with the district attorney's office ruling out foul play as the cause of his death. So he kicked it.
Bye-bye, Pawn.
Right. Then our last one. I think he's the last one. Yeah. Daniel Thomas Tavarez Jr. He gained notoriety while serving time in prison for the murder of his mother.
Wow.
During his incarceration, he shocked prison staff by sending a threatening letter indirectly admitting to the highway killings. What made this revelation even more chilling was the fact that Tavares had intimate knowledge of the location of where another victim, Gail Botello, had been buried. It was believed that Botello's body was hidden just a mile away from Tavares' home in New Bedford. The evidence against him continued to mount as he later was found guilty of two more recent killings, those of Brian and Bev Mock. And in 2015, he faced another conviction, this time the murder of Gail Botello. The string of crimes committed by Tavares definitely showed the acts of violence that he was capable of, but there was not enough evidence to prove that he killed the other ones.
Right.
So we do have one more, I'm sorry. And that is the Lisbon Ripper.
The Lisbon Ripper.
Right. This is wild here. So the Lisbon Ripper is an unidentified serial killer that terrorized the streets of Lisbon, Portugal,
I was gonna say, Lisbon, I don't think I've ever heard of being in Massachusetts.
between 1992 and 1993. During this time, three sex workers were brutally murdered and disemboweled using a weapon other than a knife. They could never determine what the weapon was, but they just knew it wasn't a knife. Shockingly, two more sex workers were shot and killed on the opposite side of the Tagus River during the same period. The gruesome nature of these crimes earned the killer the infamous nickname the Lisbon Ripper. The investigation took an internal turn when two detectives from the Portuguese police traveled to New Bedford to gather information on similar killings known as the Highway Killings. Simultaneously, two FBI agents traveled to Lisbon, suspecting that the crimes on both sides of the Atlantic might have been the work of the same individual who traveled back and forth. This theory gained traction as many of the victims in the Highway Killings had Portuguese ancestry, and the New Bedford had a significant Portuguese community. The Lisbon Ripper's reign of terror didn't end there, as four more killings in Belgium, the Netherlands, Denmark, and the Czech Republic were linked to the Lisbon murders. So you're talking about multiple countries here. The prevailing belief was that the Lisbon Ripper had transitioned into a long-haul truck driver, allowing him to commit crimes across different countries, like traveling. But in a surprising turn of events, in 2011, a 21-year-old man named Joel applied to participate in the Portuguese edition of the reality show Secret Story. The show revolves around participants trying to uncover each other's secrets while keeping their own hidden. Joel's secret was a shocking revelation. He claimed that his father, José Pedro Guedes, was the notorious Lisbon Ripper. The authorities took this claim seriously, leading to the arrest of José, who was 46 years old at the time. He confessed to the three slayings, but due to the 15-year statute of limitations for murder in Portugal, he could not be prosecuted for those crimes. However, there was still a possibility of prosecuting him for the murder of a prostitute in Aveiro, Portugal in 2000, as well as other similar murders that occurred in Germany or their neighboring countries during the 1990s when he resided there. It remains unclear whether he ever lived in the United States, and in 2013 he stood trial for Alvaro's murder, but was ultimately found not guilty due to lack of evidence. So that is the New Bedford Highway Killers, or killer I and killing.
They all did it.
They partnered.
There was something going on, dude.
I wonder if it's like the Texas, like the Texas killing fields, where it's multiple people
and they just know dumping. That this is like a place that, like, hey, they haven't caught anybody here yet.
Yeah, so we're just gonna dump our body here.
What a shiesty thing, though, to think about. Like, if they're not wild. I mean, there are places like that happens, and it's like, oh man, like I just can't think of it. But the thing that really set me off was the giving. Like, of the items to another dead body that didn't belong with them, that was the part that was like, that's a little odd. But it's also like, this is the same person.
It's almost like, it's almost like, you can't catch me, but look here, I'm gonna show you. I did that one too.
Yeah, it really just, I did not like that. I did not like that at all.
And it's still unsolved to this day. They don't know who done it.
They didn't ever figure out who did the Texas killing fields either, did they? Like, they maybe like one or two of them?
But yeah.
Yeah, but like not concrete.
They know that it's multiple people that did it there, but yeah.
Oh my gosh. So they probably kind of know who did this, just not definitively.
Right? They just can't, like...
The fact that you keep finding these killing highways, and I don't know anything about them.
Sorry.
That's where my body's going to end up, watch. Thank you so much. I did not, and I'm from, like, not that part of, like, Massachusetts, because it's not close to New York, but, like, it's close enough in proximity. Yeah. It's like hearing about news from North Carolina. Yeah. You know, that's your neighbor.
Yeah.
But I'd never heard of that before.
Yeah.
At all.
So, well, it was probably because it was prior to your birth, and unfortunately, cases that happened in the 80s and early 90s, a lot of times are forgotten about, because there's so many things that are going on these days, and there's so much, like, technology nowadays that cases are so much easier to solve than they were in the past.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate it, though. Thank you so much.
I mean, I want to say you're welcome, but I don't
always say you're welcome.
But
because you do the research.
And I know. I got so excited when I got ready to present this one. I don't know why, but anyways.
Probably because we're tired and you're like, yay, I get to talk about it.
I get to talk about this. Well, I've been sitting on this for weeks, too, so.
I know.
Like, I knew this was the case I was covering, so I was like,
well, Thank you so much. I do appreciate it. What state are we in next?
Nebraska.
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 That will bring us to Nebraska on Monday. Please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. Send us an email if you have any stories to sinisterstatespodcast@gmail.com. Please consider joining our Patreon. Any parting words for the fans?
Don't kill anybody. Like, that's so sad. 11 women. And they were just dumped like a piece of garbage on the side of the road. So, at this point, run background checks on the people that you date. I think that's the best advice I can give anybody today. Background check people. Fact check. Don't get in the car with strangers. Don't Uber either. Ubers terrify me. I don't know if I've ever told you that, but they terrify me.
They can be terrifying, yeah.
No, they terrify me from the jump.
Oh, I've been in a few Ubers.
I mean, I had to Uber one time by myself, and it was the most terrifying thing I've ever done in my life.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, I guess the concept is like, why are you afraid of an Uber? Have you ever been in a taxi?
No.
Oh,
I
I've been
don't
in a
trust
taxi.
people like that.
Oh, okay. I'm not saying anything
No, I'm
else. I'm
just
not telling
saying,
you that
that's
you have
just
to.
me. I'm terrified of anything like, no.
Well, I
I'm
can see why
weirdo.
you're not weird. Listen,
High anxiety.
my bridge irrational fear that everybody thinks is irrational is no longer irrational, so
Same, bruh. Remember
told
me and
you.
you had that whole talk about the bridge collapsing, and I was terrified that I was going to be on a bridge and it was going to collapse, and then that stuff happened. Nope. We must
So don't
now.
ever think that your fears are irrational. But as always, everybody, we hope you enjoyed, and there's probably something sinister right in your own backyard.
Bum, bum, bum.